Okay, guys, it's 8 o'clock. Let's have an AA meeting. All right. Hey, I like my Steelers jersey right there. Yes, sir. Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Chris Ward. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their life. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And at this time, Tim's going to come up and introduce our speaker. Tim is going to do the honor.
I'm Tim, I'm an alcoholic. Glad to introduce Tammy. She's told her story here before, and I really loved it. And if you were here, you probably remember it. And I told her then, you're definitely in the rotation. She's been sober a long time, still does the deal diligently. I've always thought long introductions don't make it a better story. So please welcome Tammy.
Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm an alcoholic. Hey. I'm going to tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm a little nervous, but I'm sure I'm going to get through this with God's help. So I said a little prayer before. I'm born and raised in Atlanta. I have one younger brother who's 5 years younger than me. So I had a really great mom and a really great dad when I was growing up, and kind of middle class family. My dad was in the military, so we traveled a little bit when I was younger and stuff. My brother was born in Minnesota, and then we ended up coming back to Atlanta, even though I was like born here. We kind of traveled around and then we came back. I was basically an insecure kid, okay? Let's start here. I was an insecure kid, you know. I had red hair, freckles, got made fun of, the whole, you know, nine yards, felt different than everybody, never felt like I fit in. You know, like I hear a lot of people say here, that's what it was like. For me, it took alcohol and drugs to change that. When I was in high school, I was like pretty much a goody two shoes, and I was in every club there was. And now I realize I did the whole overachievement thing, and I did that so I could feel good about myself, so I could feel worthy, so I could feel approved, so I could feel lovable. That was my first drug of choice, was just overachievement. And my story is really that of addiction. I'm multi-addicted. It's like anytime it feels good, tastes good, looks good, I'm all for it, and more is always better. And I will always struggle with that. I've come to that conclusion. That is never changing for me, which is why I have to keep coming back here. It started with me with overachievement. It went to food. I had to struggle with the eating disorder. Pretty much my whole life, food has always been, that was like my first one, you know. But I didn't really start drinking until I went to college. Because, like I said, I was like this little goody two-shoes in high school. You know, it was all about being the teacher's pet and being an A student and being in all the sports and all the clubs and everything. And so drugs were not part of that at that time. I didn't get introduced to that until I went into college. I was a French major, so I lived in Paris for a year. It's like this different person showed up when I got to Paris. You know, like I had pretty much been held in pretty tight-knit family, you know, and then when I went to Paris, it was like this wild child came out, and I was going out drinking every night and smoking pot and sleeping around. I mean, then, you know, men and promiscuity came in. You know, that was another thing I had to deal with, was looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, not knowing how to say no to a man. If you just looked at me and said I was pretty, that was all she read. I was, you know, okay, you know. And so I just was pretty easy at that point. And but it just shows me, like, how lost and insecure I really was. And So when I got back from Paris, I ended up graduating from University of Georgia. And, you know, drinking really took off there, too. And I just know that, like, when I first started drinking, it was like everything changed. It was like all of a sudden I, you know, just like a lot of people say, you know, I felt good about myself. I felt confident. I felt pretty. I felt like I was enough. You know, I could talk to people. I wasn't shy anymore and reserved. I loved that, you know, because I've always been kind of reserved, and I hated that about myself. I didn't want to be reserved. I wanted to be the girl in the center of the room getting all the attention, and I just didn't have it in me. I just didn't have it in me. That's not who I was. And now I'm okay with that. See, that's the good thing about being sober, is now I've come to terms with my basic personality type. I'm okay with being reserved. I don't have to have a lot of people around me. I can go out to dinner by myself, and I'm perfectly fine, you know? So it's kind of like, it's nice, you know? That's one of the nice things about sobriety, is really coming into your own and coming into acceptance of really who you are, you know? You know, alcohol led to, when I graduated from college, I got a job at the airport as an interpreter, and I had a dual degree. It was French and Spanish, so I helped people get through immigration and customs at Hartsfield, and I did that for a couple of years, and I started hanging out with a faster crowd, and I was always a blackout drinker, by the way. So like what started out as fun and everything wound up being complete humiliation. You know, like the next day I had to like put a bag over my head because I was embarrassed to hear what I did. You know, alcoholism, like I can see now, like, you know, it was there the whole time. I just didn't know that being a blackout drinker was a real good sign that you were an alcoholic. So I met cocaine, basically, when I got out of college. It's like the minute I did that stuff, I was just, I spiraled down, like, quick. Like, 6 months after I did that, I was in my first treatment center, and I lost my career job. And I just was so excited because I liked cocaine so much that I just, like, walked in there with a halter top and resigned. I mean, that's just how immature I was. Like, when I look back and I'm, like, horrified at my behavior. To make a really long story a little bit shorter, I went through a series of treatment centers. I mean, a series. I was always getting kicked out of treatment centers. I was very rebellious. I would sneak out and get with the boys. They'd catch me. I'd get thrown out. You know, my mother was spending a ton of money on really nice treatment centers. And finally, she said, you know what? Not anymore. And she said, you are on your own. And I wound up, I think it was Carp, Chandler Road. Yeah, not so nice, actually. But it was an awakening for me. It was like what I needed. It was like a rude awakening to what I was doing and where this thing was taking me. And I needed that. I absolutely needed that. I can honestly say today that my mother's, she went to one Al-Anon meeting, and that's all it took for her. I mean, that was it. And she got the message. She really got the message, you know. She was like, if you're going to do this, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. And my mother was my best friend. I adored my mother. We were so close. We did everything together. For her to do that was so difficult. I put her through hell. I absolutely did. So anyway, it took a beating, right? Okay, so I went through some relapses, a bunch of treatment centers. Finally got a year sober. What did I do but move out with one of the guys in treatment? I do not recommend this. I do not recommend this at all. And we ended up relapsing. Okay, so after my first year, because of a very bad choice, I lost my sobriety. So relationships for me were very dangerous just because of the kind of people that I chose. I chose people that were emotionally unavailable, very immature, and usually addicts with very little sobriety. Not a good combination. And those were always the guys that I chose. So I have a really, you know, ugly story of relationships and early sobriety. The fact that I've got the time I've got now is ridiculous because I don't know how I stayed sober through the behavior that I had in early sobriety. Yeah, so anyway, we relapsed. I, luckily, through the grace of God, in that one night, I said, I'm not doing this again. I'm not doing this again. And I was able to get back on track. And I was able to get 5 years sober after that. Now, he was not so fortunate. And we ended up breaking up as a result because he could not stay sober. And, you know, that's why it's so bad. You know, that's why when people say in early recovery, try to stay away from relationships, there's a good reason for that, especially if you're like me. I have seen it work with people that, like, they, you know, especially if you pick somebody with 20 years sober, great. But I never did. I never did, you know. They were always right out of treatment, you know. I went on to get about 5 years, and then I kind of got away from the program. And I thought because my obsession had gone away and I didn't really feel like using anymore that I was cured, you know, I was good. You know, sometimes we forget that the reason we're doing so good is because we're coming here and we're doing the steps and we've, you know, got a support group and we have a higher power and we're doing the deal, right? We forget that we're taking the medication, which is why we're doing so good. So I got away from that. I started dating somebody that smoked pot, another really stupid thing to do, you know, and made a comment that pissed me off, you know. And anyway, next thing you know, and by the way, I had a friend at the time, too, that I was hanging out with that was smoking crack. And by the way, my cocaine addiction, I mean, I started off snorting, went to smoking, and then I went to shooting up. Literally was out on the streets. I lost everything. If I didn't mention that before, I lost everything. And I wound up with hepatitis C in jail. So it was, you know, I just want to say that's where this stuff takes you, you know. And, luckily, through the grace of God, there is no, I don't have it anymore. I don't have it anymore. I went through some treatment, and it's been completely eradicated and has been for years. So that's definitely a gift from God. But I was hanging out with somebody that was smoking crack. She wasn't doing it around me. But the fact that she was doing it and I was hanging out with her was just ridiculous. You know, once again, just really bad choices of hanging out with people that are using, especially things that used to be my drug of choice. So next thing you know, I don't know, it's like all of a sudden the switch turned, and from not being at meetings and being away from my support group and not being spiritually connected, hello, next thing you know, I'm calling her going, let's party. And I mean, I was out like that. I had to go through the whole thing, everything that I had acquired in those 5 years, I had to lose again. I can't even tell you how many cars I went through. I mean, the material things, you know, are not as near as important, but just kind of shows you, gives you a little illustration. But it's the damage that I did internally and emotionally and spiritually and to my family. That's the bad part. I don't even know. It's a blur. It's honestly a blur. I went through some things, you know, some more treatment centers, and I, you know, it took me a minute to get back on track. And the last time I used, it was December 24th, 1997. And I was in a seedy hotel. I had lost everything. The only reason I even had And this had to be a God thing, too. I mean, now I can look back, I can see how God was taking care of me, okay? God was really taking care of me the whole time. Otherwise, I'd be dead. There's no question. But this girl felt sorry for me, and it was like Christmas time, and so she just paid for this little room for me. And I had, like, a bag of clothes and my cat. That was, like, all I had. And she let me use her car, too, which was, you know, crazy because, you know, I could never keep cars, you know. So, you know, and none of this really makes sense to me now except for the fact that God was taking care of me. I remember going to, I was right across from Triangle, and I was going to Triangle meetings just for a few days when I was there, and then I would go back up and I would, like, try to use and all that, and but I didn't really have any money, so, you know, I went through the whole, you know, do what you gotta do, right, to get what you need. And I did. And, you know, there was nothing I wouldn't do to get high. I did come to that point. There was literally nothing I wouldn't do to get high. Probably the only thing I didn't do was kill somebody, thank God. That was about it. I just remember sleeping with this guy for drugs. And it wasn't drugs he gave me. And I was once again humiliated and was sitting on the floor. And I'm like, you know, it's Christmas Eve, no nothing, just completely humiliated myself. And, you know, he gave me soap is what he gave me. And this thought came to me, this is not who you are, and you do not have to live like this. And that, I know, was God. That was my moment of clarity. There's no question. I was just done. I was just done. I got up, I called my mom, and I said, you know what? I'm done. I just want to come home, you know. And I came home, and so now my sobriety date is December 25th, Christmas Day, 1997. And I have never looked back. I've never looked back. And it took me a pretty deep bottom to get there, you know. And not everybody has to go there, you know. That's the beauty of this program. You know, you can, I mean, hopefully something I'm saying is helping somebody not have to go there. I really hope so, because it was tragic, you know. I've got war stories that you would never even want to hear. In a way, I'm glad it was tragic because it keeps me sober today. I have a very healthy fear of this disease, very healthy fear. I don't think for one minute I have another recovery in me. I'm too old. There's no question. I could never go through getting sober again because it's not easy. And, you know, what I found is every time you pick up, you have to bottom out again. Again. You don't know you're going to get right back on. You may not ever get back on. That's why people go out, you know, after having 20 years or whatever, and then they go use, and they OD, and they're gone. And I knew that that would happen to me, because this thing is progressive. It's no joke. It is no joke. And we see people die in here. So I have a very healthy fear of this disease today, and I'm so grateful for that. So, you know, I stay close to the program. That's what I've learned. I stay close to the program. I hit a few meetings a week. You know, I have people I know that I love here. I have phone numbers. I have a support group. I have other programs. So let me just touch on that. You know, I've had to deal with a lot of stuff since I've been sober. I put down the drugs and alcohol. I had to deal with my food. I had to deal with my codependency and my relationship issues and how screwed up that was. I've had to do the steps on a lot of this stuff. I've had to deal with my money. And so I belong into a lot of different programs, really. I mean, I've been in a lot of them. You know, I don't necessarily go to all of them all the time or anything. But when something comes up that I have to deal with, I deal with it, you know. And if I need to go to, you know, other meetings for a while to surrender something that is kicking my butt, then that's what I do. You know, what I found is this thing is like, it's a spiritual solution, and it's all about surrender. I couldn't get sober until I surrendered, you know, and I was on my knees asking for God's help. I couldn't do it, you know, and for me, I have to bottom out with almost everything to surrender it. You know, there's got to be enough pain. Pain is the great motivator for me to get me to be willing enough to do something different, to take suggestions, to be uncomfortable, you know, to do things I don't want to do, just, you know, to go to any length. All those things, I mean, pain is the great motivator to do that. And that's a good thing. I've come to realize that consequences are my friends. As much as I hate them, they're my friends. I mean, if I didn't have them, I'd be dead. There's no question, you know. I mean, I needed those to, and I still need them, to alert myself that, you know, this is not getting better. It's getting worse. And any addiction will take you down. Because I've got several that I know about that I've had to work really hard on because they were taking me to the same place drugs and alcohol were, which was astounding to me, you know, making me want to die. I'm like, okay, well, you know, so I just have to be willing to ask for help. And I've learned that here. I've learned here that I can ask for help, that there is help here. The steps I can work on all my issues, and I do work on them. Whenever I'm struggling with something that I either can't stop doing and I want to stop doing, then I know that I'm powerless, right? If I want to stop doing something that's hurting me and I can't stop doing it, then I'm powerless. So I have to ask God's help for that, you know, to give me the willingness and ability to let go of it. And then I have to seek out help with people that know something about whatever it is, you know. And I've gotten that. So, and every year it just seems like my road gets a little bit more narrow, you know, and I have to, like, let go of more and more things, you know. You know, like I said, like when I first got sober, the things I did then, I mean, I could never do now, thank God, you know, but, and then some of the things I did last year, I can't do now, you know, because it doesn't feel good anymore. I'm called to be more and more honest. And, you know, it says in the big book, you know, if we fail to enlarge our spiritual condition, then we have a very good chance of drinking again. And this past year, you know, I was basically brought to my knees again with something else that I was struggling with. It has taken a lot more prayer and meditation for me to get through that. My relationship with God has gotten so much stronger. I feel more connected than I ever have. It's not every day that I feel that way, but I do feel like God is revealing himself in a way that is pretty cool, actually. And I'm feeling more and more loved, you know, by God. And the more loved I feel, the more I want to do the right thing. Because it's all about feeling loved. You know, that's all I ever wanted was love. I mean, I just wanted to be loved. I just wanted to feel worthy and like I was worth something. And, but nothing or no one can really give that to me except for God, you know, not fully. And so I'm learning to really rest on that relationship and spend a lot more time with my higher power that I choose to call God. And that seems to be the answer for me. And I can get specific with people if they want to ask me after the meeting what that looks like. You know, so it's just about, you know, we just keep coming back. We don't give up. We keep looking up and we keep praying. You know, that's it. You know, that's the that's the secret solution, you know. Just it's not even a secret. It's just, you know, if you keep coming back, though, you know, even if there's nothing else you can do, if you just keep coming back, even if you go out and you drink and you just come back, you've got a shot. You've got a shot. But you don't want to just leave and give up, you know, because then your chances are not very good. Because there's hope here and there's love here and God's here. I hear God speak through each and every one of you. If I want to hear what God wants to say to me, all I have to do is go to a meeting and pray about it before I go. And you can bet I'm going to hear something that I need to hear. And I always know it's from God. I know when it's something I need to hear. So to me, there's no mistake. You know, there is definitely a God today. There's no question in my mind. And I never had a problem with God. I know a lot of people do. But I just say, just ask God to reveal himself to you if you have a problem with God. That's all. Just ask God to reveal himself. And just pray, even if you don't believe in anything, and see what happens. Just see what happens. See if something happens, you know. I have found that when I pray, things happen. Things happen when I pray. It's a beautiful thing, and it's there's power in prayer. And so I pray for a lot of people when I know they're hurting, because I know it helps. And a lot of people prayed for me. And I know that's why I'm alive today, too. I don't know if there is anything else I want to say, you know, other than I'm just really grateful to be sober today. But I tried to relay the message as best as I could that this is... AA saved my life, okay? AA saved my life. I came into AA and I found this is like the foundation of the 12-step program is right here in AA. And from here, it just goes out to everywhere else. Anywhere else you want to get help, but it starts here in this room. And so I love AA with all my heart. I love all you people that have been there for me. And even if I don't know you, I know you. That's what's so great about the AA rooms, you know. Like, you could ask anybody anything and they'd be okay with it. You know, like, where else? It's like we're not strangers in here, even if we don't know each other, which is really pretty cool. So I'm really grateful to be sober today. And thank you for letting me share my story.
She had 9 minutes and 8 seconds left. Tim's egg timer. I love it. Thank you again so much. Another round of applause for Tammy. Thank you. All right, I have not asked anyone to hand out the chips. Do I have a volunteer who would like to? Julie, would you like to give out the chips? I just voluntold you.
I'm Julie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
I was late, but I had heard Tammy's story before, so I know it's really, really good. Thank you, Tammy. We have a white chip for anybody who wants to come in for the first time or after experimenting. Try our way of life. Anybody need a white chip? All right, we have a silver chip for 30 days and nights in a row. Anybody? We have a red chip for 90 days.
Yes!
Anybody else for 90 days? 6 months? I have to show it to you. It's yellow. 9 months. Have a green one. Last call on green for 9 months. I know there's a special birthday, but are there any birthdays that we don't know about? Anybody have a first one or multiple birthday? All right. Cool.
Hey, everybody. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim.
And our friend Tinsley is celebrating 18 years. Now, when he was celebrating 8 years, I came in and the week before and picked up my first white chip. That was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Of all people, he's the next speaker. What a draw. I've always been a big fan. I had to hear his story. When I left after that first time hearing his story and how he did it, I did like to think that I could do it too. He's the man, Tinsley.
Cool. My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And this is 18 years. And in addition to being an alcoholic, I'm also really sunburned, too. I got at the Biscayne benefit yesterday all day out in the sun. And thank you, Kat, for your service. Thank you, Mike. You inspire me. And thank you for your story tonight. I could really relate. And I hope that on Christmas Day, you'll come pick up your 20 years here. We have the Alcathon that lasts 24 hours. So you can come at midnight if you want to get it right at that hour. But I hope you'll honor us for picking up your 20 years here. So anyway, I continue to do this stuff that I did when I first came in. I met a man when I got my white chip, and he told me that if I would do five things, I would stand a great chance of staying clean and sober. He said, one, go to a ton of meetings. Two, get a competent sponsor. Three, work all 12 steps in order. Four, learn how to pray. And five, work with others. And even though I was in and out of the rooms for 8 years prior to the time that I got my last white chip, I have never once relapsed when I held a service position in Alcoholics Anonymous. So get yourself a service position. Get into action. Okay, that's it. Thanks for my sobriety.
All right. Thank you. Does anybody else want to give a second thought about white chip? Do you like the white chip? All right, everybody. That's Bill. Way to go, Bill. All right. Thank you all.
Thank you, Julie. Okay, thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers Meeting tonight. And
the girl for me.